A long, long time ago, when human beings were not so fixed in their physical bodies as they are today, there lived a man, or was it a woman, who made for himself a marvelous mask, a mask that could pull many faces. He used to put on the mask and entertain himself by suddenly accosting people and watching their reactions. Sometimes the mask was laughing, sometimes crying, sometimes grimacing and scowling. His victims were always shocked at the sight of such an extraordinary, unnatural, unfamiliar face, even when it was smiling. But whether they laughed or cried made no difference to him. All he wanted was the excitement of their reactions. He knew he was himself behind the mask. He knew he was the joker, and that the joke was on them. At first, he'd pop out with the mask on a couple of times a day. Then, as he got used to the excitement and wanted more, he began leaving the mask on all day. Finally, he saw no need to take it off at all, and slept in it. For years the man wandered through the land, enjoying himself behind the mask. Until one day he awoke, feeling a feeling he'd never felt before. He felt lonely, cut off, something missing. Jumping up in alarm, he stepped out in front of a beautiful woman and immediately fell in love with her. But the woman screamed and ran away, shocked by the frightening, unfamiliar face. "Stop!" he cried. "It's not me!" wrenching at the mask to tear it off. But it was him. The mask wouldn't come off. It was stuck to his flesh. It had become his face. The man, through his fabulous mask, was the first person to enter this unhappy world. But let me finish the story. Time went by, and no matter how hard the man tried to tell everyone what a disaster he'd brought on himself, no one would believe him. No one was interested in listening anyway, because they'd all copied him. They'd all put on masks of their own to get the new excitement of playing at being what they were not. Like him, they'd all become the mask. But now something worse had happened. They'd not only forgotten the joke and the joker, they'd forgotten how to live joyously as the being behind the mask. How the man eventually put a stop to the masquerade and returned to his joyous being is the finale of the story and the rest of this tape, for all fables must have a happy ending. Now let's get on with it. The mask you are wearing is your personality. Look in the bathroom mirror. That's it. Watch the faces you pull. Sometimes approving, often disapproving. You can't really believe it's you. So you look in every passing mirror, shop windows and all, to reassure yourself and confirm it's you. Sometimes you even get a weird, irrational feeling of wanting to strip off the mask, don't you? This is not uncommon. It's just that people don't like to talk about it. It sounds silly. But it's not so silly, is it, when you start being honest? The biggest load you're carrying in your life is your personality, the strain of pretense. Keeping it up weighs you down and sucks the life out of you. You blame so many things for the feeling of heaviness and lack of life. You blame your work, your relationships, your diet, your problems. And yet it's your personality that has cut you off from your natural joy and vibrance. The personality makes you worried and emotional. It's the cause of your moods and self-doubt, your depressions and times of misery. It confuses your mind. It's fearful of the future and guilty or regretful of the past. It gets listless, bored and restless with the present. It's the unsuspected shadow that slides in between you and your partner. It's the cunning and knowing in the eyes. It lives off every kind of stimulus, good and bad, depression and excitement. And it's utterly terrified of being found out, discovered as the phony and spoiler it is. The personality is the face of dishonesty. Do you recognize any of these symptoms in yourself? Then you're ready to begin dismantling the personality. I say dismantle because the personality is a mantle. A mantle is a cloak, and you've thrown the mantle of the personality around you to shield you from the nastiness of the world and the hurtfulness of people. What you've done is you've made the personality your protector. You've handed over much of your authority. So the personality jumps to your defense immediately you feel hurt, threatened, or criticized. It hits out for you with piercing or bludgeoning words. Sometimes you wince at its violence and insensitivity. But then it's your champion, your defender. So you meekly go along with its appalling behavior and make excuses for it to yourself. The wily protector, given absolute power, becomes the absolute dictator. And you despair of ever being free. The truth is, you have no need of this protection. The personality is like a bully at school, whose gang you once joined to be on the safe side. After you've grown up, he comes back and convinces you you still need him. He's able to do this because without knowing it, you harbor all the pain of yesterday, the old fears and hurts of your childhood, your youth, and adult life. The bully, knowing your fear, won't leave you alone, and you're terrified to lose his protection. Notwithstanding this, the personality does have its place and role. It makes a rotten master, but it is a good servant. The servant must no longer be allowed to run your life. It's fouled it up long enough. Everything you perceive as wrong with the world is the result of someone's personality. In fact, the world itself was constructed by the ignorance of personality. That's why the world's such a cruel, exploitative and dishonest place compared with the beauty and integrity of the earth and nature. Just as the personality lives off you and drains your resources, so the world is exhausting the earth's resources. The world is the personality of the earth. So that's a brief outline of the personality. In the rest of this tape, we're going to fill in the whole picture. First, I'm going to show you your true nature, what you were born with, then your false nature, the ground of your personality. Second, you'll be seeing in a new light how the genius of nature functions without the need of personality, and how you can return to living in much the same way. Also, how you came to be separated from that natural genius. Third, I'll be showing you how the personality develops, where it actually comes from. You are going to understand what the personality is, so that you can gradually realize, quote, "It's not me," unquote. Fourth, I'm going to describe what is me, the real me behind the mask or mantle of the personality. Finally, I'm going to give you 10 exercises to practice in your daily life. All of this will be easy to follow because I'll be demonstrating it in your own experience as an ordinary man or woman. As you keep replaying the tape over the next 12 months or so and practice the exercises, you'll slowly separate from the domination of the personality. In all this, you'll be descending into your own subconscious where the truth of this matter lies. You'll discover a greater presence of authority in yourself. You'll be taking more responsibility for your life, straightening out your messy relationships for good, and putting right the situations your personality has left you with. You weren't born with your personality. You were born with nothing. And you can see that by looking at a new baby. A baby is a body of love. It has just come out of the mystery, the almost timeless place that is the womb. There's the beautiful little body, its lovable movements and sweet, fresh appearance. People love to smell babies. They pick them up and bury their noses in them, and the fragrance is certainly not only Mr. Johnson's talcum powder. There's a smell to a baby that's not of the five senses. It's the psychic smell of innocence. And that innocence is still in you. Nonetheless, there's something missing in a baby. For all its beauty and wonder, it can't cope with the world. Someone has to think for it and protect it. The baby is lacking in experience, the experience of living. We call the acquisition of experience growing up or getting older. That's what you've done. That original baby body of love is still your body, but something has happened to it. It has experienced living. I'm going to ask you a leading question. I'm not putting anything on you that's not the truth. This tape is about you, the being listening to it, who was once a baby and is now an adult. So I'm speaking in your experience. And what is true in your experience is the truth. The question is, are you innocent? Having gained the experience of all your years, can you say that you are still unburdened like a newborn babe? Can you say that what you were originally, this innocence, you are now? And if not, why not? There are two ways of answering this. You can answer from the inside or the outside. From the outside, looking in at your tensions, worries, and problems, you could say, "No, I'm burdened by many things I know and remember, my guilts, my doubts, my fears. I'm free sometimes, but I know that as soon as I'm reminded, I'm not innocent. I start to be anxious and to worry." The other way of answering is from the inside. In your deepest and stillest moments, you could say, "Yes, I am innocent." And that's the truth. For inside you are always the sweet and innocent child you were, no matter how old you are in years. Sweetness and innocence is your nature. But sweetness and innocence, like a baby, have no place in this world without protection. They will be stamped on, manipulated, exploited, abused, and ill-treated. How can I be sweet and innocent like a baby in a world like this? And the answer is, of course, you can't. Out here, you can't be what you are inside. That's how it seems, anyway. But nature, Mother Nature, provides the solution naturally. And the solution is experience. Living means gathering experience. You can't live without gaining experience, without learning the hard way, that if there's glass on the footpath, you'd better not tread on it with bare feet. In the same way, our beautiful inner nature is protected by the good sense of our experience. But we seem to have forgotten this. When it comes to our emotional lives, we ignore our hard-won experience. We repeatedly reach out and embrace what hurts and lacerates us. We put up with and stay with manipulative, emotional, and angry people. In other words, hurtful people. We succumb to the selfish demands of their personalities and our own. We allow other people's personalities to live off us as we live off them. In a mad and perverse trade-off, we agree to exploit each other and suffer in turn. Do you really want to live with an angry, emotionally demanding, or indifferent partner? Of course not. Your innocence can't relate to such destructive love, if you can call that love. But you no longer live from your innocence and pure experience, that love you were born with and the good sense you developed. Your personality has got in between. And now in your emotional life, your love life, you're not sure which is the good sense and which is the spoiler. Do you want to suffer? What a silly question. But how else do you explain it? The way you put up with the unnecessary pain inflicted on you by family and friends? How do you explain the way you expect loved ones and friends to put up with your unhappy moods? This odd way of living together you excuse by saying, "No one's perfect. We have to put up with each other's moods and unhappiness." But I'm asking, do you? Do you have to put up with the depressions, anger, and unhappiness of others? Where did you get that crazy notion? I'll tell you. It comes from your personality and the personalities of others. And it's an utter lie. You've been deceived and you don't know it. You don't realize. To the personality, misery, depression, and conflict are as satisfying and fulfilling as excitement, adventure, and new experiences. Personality gets a kick out of both, the up and the down. You don't. You naturally enjoy the stimulation of new and varied experience. But your true nature doesn't want to hurt anyone in the process. The personality, on the other hand, couldn't care less who's hurt or who suffers, you or anyone else. It just wants the experience, good or bad. You truly want the good for yourself and everyone. That's because in your deepest part, in your innocence, you are good. You are love. Living love. Love is your ground, your true nature. Out of that inner ground arises your intelligence, which looks out and sees the external world. You are like a lovely flower, your roots planted firmly in love, and your perception of life shining with beauty and the intention of good for all who can see to see. That's the truth. That's what you are. Or that's what you were before your personality took over and made you unhappy. Now you swing between the two. One day you're loving, contented and sweet. The next day bored, depressed, anxious or moody, and those around you suffer. So love is your true nature, and the personality is your false nature. Now, where does the personality come from? It comes from pain, emotional pain. While you were gaining experience, you unwittingly gathered pain. You accumulated it bit by bit as an infant, teenager, and adult. Every time you felt hurt by others, or you failed to get what you wanted, a pained emotion arose and stuck to the one before it. Imperceptibly, a ball of past pain grew inside you. Out of that pain arose the personality, the person you are not. You are love, remember. This pained person's name is fear, an anxious, frightened awareness of the world, a negativity of perception, the terror of being hurt again, pained in the present as in the past. The trick is, you don't realize the pain is there, or that the pain is as intelligent as you are. You don't realize it's speaking and acting through you much of the time, looking for security, to be liked, loved, accepted. It sees the present through the past. It projects its pain onto present events, rendering them painful when they are not. It automatically spoils the good. Here's an example. When you're making love, the fearing personality, looking for comfort to assuage its pain, will often rise up to join in the pleasure. Instantly, a shadow, in the form of a reservation, stiffness, or wrong word, comes into the good, and the feeling of good vanishes or is ruined. Have you experienced this? The same thing happens just enjoying someone's company. Have you ever been having a pleasant conversation, and one wrong word suddenly spoils or puts an end to the harmony of the situation? That's the personality butting in. Have you been suddenly hurt by what someone says? Didn't it spoil your contentment in the present, by making you relate immediately to the pain of some criticism or abuse in the past? Do you see how you put the past on the present? As I said before, nature has its own perfect way of eliminating the pain that gives rise to the personality. And this explains why there's no personality in nature, and no problems. The first pain in existence is the pain of being born. There you were, like all the other baby mammals, snug in your mother's womb, immersed in a constant fluid warmth of love that supplied everything effortlessly. No need to breathe, to eat, to keep warm, to cry for what you wanted. Then suddenly you were ejected into a world of separation, a strange new place where there was pain and contraction of cold, distance, interruption, hunger, and the relentless need to breathe and communicate by sound. An enormous, traumatizing shock. But in the face of this apparent disaster, Mother Nature as usual took over. Just as it had looked after you inside the womb, it now provided for you from inside your own psyche. Into the shocked vacuum created by your being born into a different time and space, nature released a shot of unconditioned psychic plasma. This energetic substance you now call emotion. But at that stage it was the substance of unconditioned love, timeless love. Its function was to temporarily cushion the organism against the shocking interruption of its accustomed flow of time. For in the first moments of shock, as you know from your adult experience, time literally ceases. At birth, without this bridging inflow of love, it would mean death. But love fills the gap by providing an emergency sense of comfort, warmth, or continuity. This enables you to go on, although the first impulse after the acute shock of loss is to feel you can't continue. Nature's psychic response to the pain of birth, as I just described it, happens in every animal body, not just the human body. Here's how it works. Inside every creature body, in the vicinity of the abdomen, burns a psycho-spiritual flame. The flame is constant and cosmically cold, like the sun's rays, which are cold until they pass through matter. The flame's function is to consume the emergency psychic plasma. This life-saving cushion of love or consciousness is future time. It's the future that the organism is moving towards by living and evolving. So the organism has literally borrowed time and security from its own future. The flame has to consume the plasma as quickly as possible. Speed is vital, because future time clearly has no place in the present. In the present, or presence of the body, it immediately degrades into emotion and negativity. It becomes past time or the past. All emotion is the past reasserting itself, and unless it is consumed swiftly, the organism will start living in the past and be a freak of nature. Nature's psychic response to shock continues throughout the life of the body. For example, after the shock of a fight or injury, the animals tend to seek a quiet place to lie down and lick their wounds. This is to allow the essential flame in the belly to consume, digest, and convert the emotion, the past, back into the present or presence of love or consciousness. The reconverted consciousness then serves another vital purpose, which you'll recognize from your own life. The reconverted consciousness carries the impression of the experience the animal has just been through. In other words, the animal has gained or grown in experience. From now on, it will instinctively draw upon that experience to protect its survival more efficiently in the future, just as you do after any narrow escape. And so arises the old saying, an old dog for a hard road, meaning an old experienced dog is better fitted to handle the future. So the borrowed future time serves a purpose in the present. Such is the miracle of the divine intelligence that is devising this existence. But the human animal mucks it up, disrupts the divine harmony. The human animal alone holds on to the pain of the event. The human animal thinks about the pain, goes back into the past. The consciousness is absent. This prevents the borrowed time from being converted back into love in the present. For consciousness is the key to harmony and freedom. The result is that while gaining experience, the human animal accumulates and regenerates emotional pain, which the animal does not. Both gain the life-saving experience, but only the human suffers emotionally from it. Why? Why do we do this? Whatever happened to us? It's not just what happened to us, it's what's happening now and happening to our children. We've all been misguidedly taught to hold on to our pain, and we are teaching our children to do the same. You were first taught this unnatural practice by your mother and father, who were taught by their mother and father and theirs before them. Then you were taught by the rest of your family and friends, and by the society you live in. Today, holding on to past pain and projecting the discomfort of it into the world through the personality has become the civilized way of life. Civilized? At any time, at least 20 wars are raging on the planet. Half the population is starving. much of the other half are exploited by the rest, and the whole population in their private homes or hovels are tyrannizing each other with quarrels, arguments, dishonesty, and emotional blackmail. And all of it due to people projecting their inner pain through their personality onto their fellow men and women. Like the animals, your gaining of experience was natural, but your gathering of pain was not. You were taught that to live you have to suffer, that everybody has to be unhappy sometimes. It's a lie, but you believed it. You believed it because everyone was unhappy, and you took their example as the truth. Who was there to tell you otherwise? Even the priests of Jesus were proclaiming you a sinner, a sufferer. Nobody was there to tell anyone the truth, because there was nobody to hear. Everybody was listening through the pain of personality. And so it was easy to believe that life's a pain. But it isn't life that is the pain. It's the personality projecting itself onto life. Nobody is being honest. All are living a lie. Some say life is good, and next day they weep with depression or frustration. Others lash their partners and family with hard words and cruel actions, and then protest they love them. Some think they are loving, and spend much of their time complaining and blaming others. Others pollute their homes with their foul, dark moods and expect to be loved and admired. And many put on cosmetics and a big smile for the public to cover up their dishonesty to love and life. Why is this? How did we get so out of tune with the life of the natural creatures? Well, that's the next part of the story. I was saying that we've lost touch with our natural instinctive being. The question is, how come? I said that we were taught to hold on to our pain. Nobody, thank God, taught the animals to do that. Nobody taught them to suffer, to think back and emotionalize over past hurts. That's suffering. The natural creatures don't hold on to their pain. They are instinctive. They feel physical pain just as we do, but when it's over, they instinctively let go of it. The difference between them and you is that you can reflect on the past. You can mentally dwell in the past, in the pain of your emotions. The animals can't. You have self-consciousness, past consciousness. They don't. They depend on pure experience now. No past, no pain in between. A dog can be made savage or cowering by ill treatment. But the animal doesn't dwell on the pain mentally, doesn't think about the past event or the person who caused it. The dog acts from pure experience. If it hears a voice similar to the voice of the person who caused the pain, it may turn to snarl or cower. But this happens in the moment, and as soon as the moment passes, the dog returns to its natural state. So animals have no past, have no mental awareness of the past. And nor do you, once you detach from the personality. But as you are now, you recall, remember, and wallow in the past, in your emotions. You actually relive the pain when there is absolutely no reason for it. You might be alone in the comfort of your bed, and yet be in the distress of your emotions. You keep pain alive in this way. By holding on to the emotional pain of the past, and indulging in it as a sort of perverse excitement or safe entertainment, you attach yourself to the habit. The attachment to nicotine or heroin is no different. If you continue to indulge in the emotional drug of pain, by thinking or talking about it, holding on to it, you'll become addicted. And that's precisely what's happened. Leave you alone, leave you silent in a chair with your eyes closed for 3 minutes, and you'll be thinking about the past. In no time, your thought will turn to some problem or emotional pain in your life or memory. Try it now, this minute. Push the stop button on the cassette player and be silent for a few minutes. Then come back and we'll continue. I was talking about the pain of the past that you won't let go of. You might say, I'm not aware of holding on to any pain. In fact, I'm quite free and easy. Yes, that's the conscious frontal part of your mind speaking. You're speaking for now, the present. But this pain, this ground of the personality, is in the past, in your subconscious, underneath what spoke. I say that emotional pain is stored in the abdomen. What does it mean? And the little spiritual flame in the abdomen, what's that? No doctor has ever found this fundamental pain or any sign of the flame. The belly or abdomen, of course, are what you see with your senses, your frontal awareness. I mention it only to mark the spot, as it were. But really, the pain that causes your depressions, moods, anger and the like, is in your subconscious. It's hidden completely from sight. But it's not hidden from your experience, is it? When you once heard that a lover had betrayed you, that someone you love had died, or a precious possession was stolen, where did you feel it? You didn't feel it where the doctor could find it. You felt it in your subconscious, in the deep, hidden emotional part of you. Now here's the point. There are two places in your subconscious. One is where the psychic ball of pain is lodged and out of which arises your dishonest and fearing personality. The other is where the spiritual flame is. And on top of both is your frontal awareness, your conscious mind, which you're using now to listen to my voice. Everybody loves being in touch with the flame. When they are, they register a feeling or knowledge of joy, easiness, lightness, optimism, sweetness, or love. And the conscious mind reflects this through the body as a smiling face, a sprightly step, a harmony or melody in voice and actions. Other people are pleased to be with such a body, and the man or woman themselves is contented or fulfilled. But when the frontal mind is connected with the ball of pain, the ground of emotional past, the reaction in mind and body is just the reverse. Now we're beginning to talk about living joyously, returning to what you are behind the mask. Behind every mask, behind every personality, is a character. Just what is the difference between personality and character? Most people have heard animal lovers say their pets have distinctive personalities. It makes them uniquely recognizable, they say, endearing, amusing, and enjoyable to be with. But that's not the animal's personality. It's the animal's character. And character is what you have to return to more consciously in yourself. For the character is the character of your joyous being behind the personality. Character is your God-given uniqueness. The personality so often obscures and deprives you of the pleasure of your character. Everybody without exception has character. And this lovable or admirable character appears when the frontal awareness or mind is connected directly with the flame of innocence, when the personality is no longer active. The man or woman is then seen in a different light. The unique character shines forth, and we feel pleased or privileged to be in their company. The stress of the personality arises out of the terrible contradiction of trying to hold on to existence while the life that you are is letting go every moment. Life is ceaseless movement. Everything now is different in some way to what it was yesterday. Life moves every moment. Why don't we move like life, with the speed or love that lets go every moment? The answer is in the two words, life and existence. Life is in existence, but existence is not life. Life is new every moment. Existence also should be new every moment, but we hold on to it and it becomes a pain. If you don't hold on to existence, you are the life in it, new every moment. Then the two become a harmony. Then being is joyous. The harmonious interchange between life within and existence without depends on you keeping your psyche free-flowing. The personality clogs the psychic system, which is naturally ever-moving. The personality freeze-frames existence. We freeze-framed our houses, our possessions, our children, and made them mine. We hang on to them as though they'd disappear if we didn't cling to them. It's all due to the insecure personality that feels it must hold on or lose its identity. So we fight people or countries to hold on to what we have. But life as we see it around us, behind all the personable people and their personal problems, holds on to nothing. Life lets go every moment of the last moment. Now we come to the crucial question. How can you learn to let go and be life that is new every moment? How do you start to live joyously? You have to get more energy. The remarkable thing is that all the energy you require is already in you now, but it's being wasted by your personality. There is only so much energy in your system, your body. It's not unlimited, but there's sufficient to enable you to realize the truth, that is, to return you to the joyous life behind the mask, your original, vast, and untroubled state of being. You are dissipating your energy out into existence through the personality, instead of using it to stay in your reality. The mask is kept on by energy going out. As you deny the projection of the personality, you conserve energy. When enough energy is retained, the mask collapses. It loses its independent and selfish existence. Now I'm going to show you where you're wasting this energy, since you will then be conscious of it, because you've seen it in your own experience, you'll begin to stop the leakage. You'll have more energy to address other wasteful mannerisms, attitudes, and behavior. Gradually, you'll become more conscious, more responsible, more authentic. Your character will reveal itself, and your personality will be less in control of your life. Here are 10 things for you to do, or stop doing. They will conserve your energy. To begin with, it will be hard. As you get deeper into the process, you may become confused. The personality will always be trying to bamboozle you and make you give up. But keep going. The 10 exercises will always be here, along with this tape, to remind you and guide you. And your own undeniable experience that it's working will be the demonstration of the truth. You'll notice you're lighter, easier, more joyous. And a new harmony will start pervading your whole life, within and without. Exercise 1. Give up talking about the past. The personality lives off the past, feeds off you telling your story. Each time you hear yourself indulging in this, stop. The more you practice, the easier it gets. You may lose some friends who'll say you're getting dull. You're losing your former interesting and stimulating personality. You'll know by this that you're doing well, going home. There will be times when you have to refer to the past. To break the old habit, initially, you must be extreme. The extremity is not to say anything that refers to the past. This includes what happened a minute ago, unless there's a purely practical reason for speaking like, "Did you post that letter?" And one more thing. Don't tell your sad, sad story. By stopping talking about the past, you'll eventually stop thinking about the past. That will be the beginning of the end of worry. Exercise 2. Be true to the situation, not your personal likes and dislikes. The personality lives off your emotional swings between what you like and what you don't like. It uses the pendulum dynamic to keep itself going. You can't be sure of your likes and dislikes. They change with experience and the years. So this is what you do. Be true to the situation, to the event or circumstance you're facing. What does the situation require? It may not be what suits you personally. For example, if you're employed to do a job, be true to what you're paid for, not to whether you like it or don't like it. If you insist on reacting in dislike, be true to the situation and resign, because clearly you won't be doing a good job. The personality, remember, will actually enjoy the conflict in situations like that. It wants you to go on doing a job and not liking it, because then you can complain and emotionalize about it to your friends. This consumes energy which should be used for taking action, one way or the other. Either you do the job by giving up your attitude, or you quit. That's being true. Action always clears deadlocked energy. Exercise 3. Give up being dishonest. Dishonest to yourself and your life. Anytime you're angry, resentful, or depressed, it means you are not being honest. You are not facing life as it is. Anger arises because you are not getting your own way. Instead of being angry, you should be looking at what practical action you can take to get around the obstruction. If there's no practical action you can take, your desire is impractical at this time. To be honest, you must face that fact and give up your wanting. Remember, the mask of your personality is dishonesty itself. It hides the fact that if you have a very exciting experience today, you're likely to undergo depression in a couple of days. The personality gets its satisfaction both ways, and you pay for it. Exercise 4. Don't talk unless you have something to say. The personality is always talking. Talking consumes enormous energy. So this exercise is to learn to talk less. Talking is talking about something, having a discussion, giving your opinions, speculating, rationalizing, and repeating what you've heard. Now, in this exercise, you learn the difference between talking and speaking. For instance, everyone talks about what the politician should do. You can't talk about what the politician should do unless you yourself do something towards righting the situation. But you can write to them, phone them, or cast your vote. Then you'll be taking action and able to speak from your own experience. Otherwise, you're just a talker. Only action, or speaking what you live, is true. Exercise 5. No more complaining and blaming. Complaining about your life and blaming other people and things for your difficulties is one of the main leakages of energy. When you hear yourself doing this, stop. The truth is you are responsible for your life. If you're not responsible, it's not your life, and that's absurd. Similarly, if you blame something else for what happens to you, you're giving up responsibility by giving it to others. To be responsible is to be responsible for everything that happens to you, unfolding as your life. Indeed, there are continual difficulties you have to face. They may seem to have been caused by other agencies, but you have to do your best to sort them out. That's life. You don't complain when you get a promotion at work, do you? You don't blame the boss. You feel you deserved it, that you must have earned it. In other words, you accept that you were responsible. So how can you duck out from being responsible for all the not-so-good things that happen to you? Again, it's the personality being two-faced, not being straight. It presents life as it's not, and gets away with it while you continue to blame and complain. Now to break up some seemingly trivial habits that nonetheless eat up vital energy. Exercise 6. Don't allow your fingers to fiddle with a pencil or other knick-knack. Don't drum your fingers on the table. And here's one, especially for young men. Don't, when seated, quiver or tremble your leg. And don't crack your knuckles. Exercise 7. Don't chew gum, unless you chew it intentionally to get the flavor and freshen the mouth. Then spit it out, but not on the pavement, please, which is another thoughtless action of the personality. Don't, in fact never, lick your fingers after touching food. Once you start touching and licking, it will become habitual, and even your best friends won't tell you. Don't ask for morsels to taste from your partner's plate. Either go halves or order some for yourself. That's the personality's greed and its craving for experience, not being responsible for what it wants. Exercise 8, especially for women. Don't run your fingers back through your hair when you're talking or making a point. If you wear makeup, start leaving it off. It only takes 3 months to stop thinking you look like a ghoul. Makeup, of course, is a personality projection, a cover-up hiding the awful truth of the mask. Exercise 9. Conversational habits, remembering that the personality depends on habitual unconsciousness. Stop using expressions like darling, honey, my love, and my dear when addressing your partner, friends, or casual contacts. If anything, use the person's correct name. After you've broken the habit, you'll find the endearing expression occurs naturally and appropriately. But to begin with, to break the habit and make the situation conscious, don't use such terms. Don't pat your partner down with silky words and actions when you know you're planning to be dishonest or you've done something they don't like. Say, I move to pat you down because I don't want you to react to what I've done or what I'm about to do. Then tell them straight what you've done or what you're about to do. Mostly you'll find that you won't do what you were going to do, or you'll just do it and cop the force of their disapproval. At least you'll be honest, and such honesty loosens the mask. Don't say, what I mean is, and you know, or any similar fill-in phrases, all unconscious inwards of the Western personality, now globally habitual. Don't say, to be honest, because that implies you're about to be dishonest, or that you're usually a liar. The point is, such phrases have no real meaning and are actually the mask talking. Exercise 10. Don't frown, screw up your face, or look at the ceiling before you answer a question. It's the personality pretending to be serious, sincere, or intelligent, pretending to be thinking deeply. Know that the personality is a performer and communicates through grimacing and other facial antics to assert its existence. The more serene and unaffected your face, the more in touch you are with your being. Those are the 10 exercises. Now I'd like to say something to parents. Play the fable at the beginning of the tape to your children. Play it as often as they ask you to, and while you see that they are listening attentively as children will. Listen seriously to their comments and observations. Answer the children's questions honestly and give them all the time they need to make their observations. The exercise is for you and the child to both see how the personality operates and how it interrupts and spoils the harmony of the body, the home, and the life. For instance, you will see how the developing child, at only a few months, starts to put on the mask of personality. It actually mimics the unhappy, hostile, and argumentative behavior and mannerisms of the parents and family. A child sees its mother or father pulling faces to show dislike, disgust, or to drive home an argument. It will copy these facial expressions and physical stances, even though it's not feeling those emotions. By copying and putting on the mask, it will learn to actually be angry and feel anger. A child puts on personality for two basic reasons. First, it wants attention, and second, a sympathetic reaction to whatever face it pulls, just like in the fable. A child will pretend to be coy or shy by using mannerisms and facial expressions it's seen elsewhere, in the family, at school, or on the telly. The child at first doesn't feel the emotion behind the act. But when encouraged by adults, the child enjoys their reactions and starts to believe and become its own performance, just like the Joker who forgot himself. Remember, the personality lives off every kind of emotion. It's just as fulfilled by the negative vibration of anger and frustration as it is by excitement and getting its own way. Now for all you adults, here's an intelligence test. Please ask yourself this question. Do I want to be with, live with, or love somebody who's ever moody, angry, restless, sullen, resentful, or depressed? If the answer is no, then the next question. Why do I believe that anyone, should want to live with me while I have those emotions. And finally, a caution. As you dismantle the personality and become more one with life, you will start to feel some disintegration of yourself. You will feel at times you are nothing and that you're losing your identity. Know that it's your personality you're losing, not your identity. Nothing you are or have will disappear. All that goes is the attachment, the identification with the things the personality calls me and mine. And that includes your most intimate and treasured notions of what life and love are about. For in the end I realize that nothing is mine, not even my own body. I'm behind it all, the being behind the mask in the bathroom mirror. Now back to the fable and the happy ending. It took many, many years, but in the end, the man in the mask tired of his miserable up-and-down existence. One day, he rested beside a lake in the forest. There he gazed into the transparent stillness of the water, and it reminded him of something deep within. "I'm enjoying this," he reflected. "But is that the joy, or am I the joy?" "I'm the joy," he cried, jumping to his feet. "I'm the joy of life behind all I see." Then he gave thanks, and never looked for excitement again, for he'd found the secret of living joyously. Well, that's the end of the masquerade. The secret is joy. Joy is consciousness. Life is to be enjoyed, to be made conscious by enjoying it. When you enjoy doing anything, you are conscious. If you enjoy gardening, you're conscious while gardening. If you enjoy your work, you're conscious while working. Enjoy every moment of your life, and you're living joyously. It's as simple as that. Joy or consciousness is your natural state. It's always there. It's like the sun, always shining above the shadow of the earth. Stop living in your own shadow, and the sun, the joy, immediately shines. To find joy, nothing positive can be done. It's the practice of negation, shedding the shadow, that does it. Living joyously is the joy of clarity, no problem. My whole life is then a joy or clarity of being, or a being of joy and clarity. This is there now, inside you, just waiting to be lived. You don't have to strive for it, search for it, or make it. It's you. It's yours. Your very being. And that's the happy ending.